All right, g'day Novocastrians. Yet another in our series of pre-season podcast episodes to whet your appetite for the new season kicking off. We thank Ernie Merrick for his chat with us, and we're also very, very thankful and grateful to being given some time with Jet CEO Laurie McKenna. Laurie?
Good morning.
How you doing?
I'm good.
I'm a bit ragged. Apparently, you've just stepped off a plane recently.
Yeah, just off a plane last night, but I'm fully fit and functional.
Well, by the time this podcast comes out, you'll hopefully be recovered. How was the trip overseas, and what was your takeaways from your visit to Dortmund?
Now, look, it was through the university. So the unis came on as a sponsor now. We're first time since the club's been going 13 years. So they're on the front of the shirts for the youth team and on the shorts for the first team, which is great. But I had a meeting with this professor about a year and a half ago. It was one of those meetings you think you're having a meeting, you're taking one for the team. Dortmund Uni, and they do stuff with Dortmund, and yeah, it all sounded great, but then you take one for the team and you move on. And then I got follow-up from a friend of mine's for the Central Coast, who's part of that faculty, and Dortmund had got some funding, and so Newcastle put in for funding, they got it. So now we've done two member surveys, and there'll be more coming up at the first few home games where they'll be doing face-to-face about membership, retention, just data. We know rough data, but we don't have numbers. So these guys are going to analyse all that, work it out. So the reason to go to Dortmund, to the professors who's doing that, came with us to Dortmund. And it was great. They tied it in with the Champions League game against Monaco last Wednesday, which they won 3-0. Then on Thursday, I met with the CEO and the head finance guy for a while, which was great. Just nice people. You know, they're a huge club. 850 full-time staff, which
Jesus.
Is... Because they do all the... They run the stadium, so everything's theirs. We had a symposium all day Friday, so their head marketing person... done a presentation, and which was really refreshing, because a lot of the things that we do that we think we're doing right, they're doing them as well, because their population's about 500,000, ours is about 350. Coal mining, steel town, very similar to us. Mm. Their ethics and their values are very similar to us. And I showed them a TV ad and they were blown away. They could just put Dortmund on top of that and use our new ad. They got released yesterday,
yep.
and they loved it, because it just, that's them. Because they actually show their new players a video on the club. And when I started seeing that, I went, that's the same as our TV ad. Mm. It was very similar. So it was great. And then went to the game in the Saturday home game against it with the marketing manager, which was just great to sit and watch the football and just talk. So there were a lot of similarities. So I think we'll get some data out of this that, we've got an idea now, but it actually gives us numbers. Because one thing, there's still a long way to go with the data, analysing it all. But we've been saying to FFA for many years, the clubs, I'm talking about 10 clubs, the scheduling of games affects some people attending. And we know that, like a Sunday at 7 o'clock,
yeah.
even a Friday five night o'clock. Game, or a Thursday night game, or 5 o'clock in the sun. Well... 40% of our members, who there were 600 done both surveys, which is good numbers, it was just over 40%. So that's actually a number we can say now. 40% of our members have problems because they don't come to every game because they're a problem with scheduling that affects their family. And there are another 10%, which was family issues, which could relate into that as well. So that's a big number. So that was one interesting, but there'll be many other things coming up. And they think next year it'll continue, they'll get more funding, and they'll just do more and more research, which is going to be great for us, and great for the A-League clubs,
yeah.
that we can actually get actual numbers and facts behind what we're trying to do.
Well, it ties into another question that a couple of people have asked. For those unfamiliar with what's been going on, obviously it came out possibly while you were away, was the FFA Congress vote.
Yeah, I was...
just before you left?
Just before I left. No, I had a meeting with the clubs on Tuesday, and the meeting was the next day. Or it was that afternoon. Yeah, so I was here for it, so I was aware of it, and it was great for the game.
Yeah. Well, What do you think the outcome of that Congress vote will be for us specifically, and then just for the game in general?
Specifically, the Congress, like, I think a lot of people are getting hung up on the Congress, but the big thing for the A-League clubs was there were 10 votes. The A-League clubs combined had won. So you look at all the 10 A-League clubs had the same voting as Northern New South Wales or Tasmania or Northern Territory with half a dozen players. So the thing was, so that full of football got a voice,
yep.
Women's game, the PFA, the A-League clubs, it's not that they want to control, because I think the A-League clubs will get 28% of the vote, so we can't control it anyway. Yeah. It's not about controlling, it's about the full of football having a voice. And one of the first things coming out, and that's the working group for the independent A-League, which hopefully the clubs are hoping that would start next season. So what that means for the A-League clubs, if everything goes well, there'll be more funding for the A-League clubs. You know, off the last TV deal, you know, it's well documented, we get about 3.5 million from FFA in cash and contra. And the number the clubs were looking for was around about the 4 or 5.
Mm.
So that's, again, if we get around about that 5 million, you know, we're in a good spot. So we think an independent A-League, like the English Premier League, Scottish Premier League, MLS, the J-League. So there's been a lot of modelling. A-League clubs have been doing a lot of work over the last 2 years and they've got some modelling done. So they're a working group getting started pretty quick. And obviously, hopefully for the A-League clubs, because a lot of the revenue that's brought into FFA is brought in by the A-League.
Mm.
But all that money doesn't go back into the A-League. It goes into other things.
How do you think the push for the independent A-League is going to affect the expansion plans? Do you think it's going to make any difference?
I think FFA were working very hard to get the expansion through. The A-League clubs weren't consulted at all, especially when you think the Sydney or the Melbourne clubs would be, because it's going to affect their market. There's no use putting a club in that's going to rip off 30% of somebody else's members, so it has to be strategically done.
Yeah.
Before the Congress meeting, the A-League had been meeting with the clubs to talk about expansion then, because I think they'd actually realised, well, we better talk to the guys it could affect. And I think it's not a big push by the A-League club. A-League clubs would, down the track, want 16 teams. They want expansion.
Mm.
But they want expansion where the clubs are going to be here for 10, 20, 30 years. So it's my gut feel. It's just, it could be a bit rushed to get it in for next year. I think it'll be the year after, I think.
What another question that sort of shoots off that, John Newton asked, what teams currently bidding for an A-League licence do you think will improve the quality of the league, and where do you think are the best places for those? Purely, obviously, it's just a personal thing.
Obviously, the Sydney market, Sydney and Melbourne, I think they've got three or four. I think they've got three live bids in Sydney and similar down in Melbourne. But it's strategically where those go, you know, because I know Southern Expansion would probably take away for Sydney FC. Does Liverpool take away for Western Sydney? Probably not as much.
Mm.
I think Canberra's a huge market, but I just don't know. You know, they tried it before.
Yeah.
Are they going to actually support it week in and week out? The Tasmanian bids dropped out. And,
Wollongong.
Well, you've got the Wollongong and that South Coast one. Again, the clubs never got given any information on the bids. There are apparently 8 live bids still on the go.
Yep.
One
up in Queensland, I think, as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, so I think the major cities are going to be the one, because I think what got proven once Hart came in and Wanderers came in is the derby crowds can be massive.
Mm.
You know, 60,000-odd, I think, was it last year, the year before, when Wanderers in Sydney. And so I think generating those derby games gets the bigger crowds, gets bigger TV ratings, and helps everybody.
Mm. Wollongong team would be good for us with the Steel City derby, I think.
Yeah, and we're...
Or regional rivalries.
We don't get affected by Sydney or up here, but you look what's good for us, and you're right, you get that rivalry straight away. But it's funny, when I was talking to Sydney FC during the off season, they see us more as starting to get more as a real challenge now, because where we finished last year, and where they're at is they feel themselves. It's not a derby, but it's a big occasion for them to play against the Jets now. So they feel it's an appealing game to them now, which is, I think, credit to us that we've came up in the pegging order a little bit.
Yeah, well, that pretty much segues into the next question. Same one I asked Ernie a little while ago was, how, as an overall sort of picture, how did you see last season, and what were your thoughts on how it all ended?
As the VAR, or just how?
Oh, just as an overall overall finish to the season.
Well, I think the finish was a great. We hit a wee hole with those three games coming in to the finals, and I know the Doomsday guys were all popping back up on Facebook as they do, and it's great to put them back in the box again. But you can't win every week. But I think the ride we had during the season was, even in games where we struggled, we got results. And I think that's a sign of a good team. You just battle on. And the game in Perth when Johnny Katrumbis hit off his shin and went in, and then we got the own goal. You know, year before you couldn't buy results like that. So we had that momentum and belief. And we shared the goals about, which is important as well. But coming into that, the semi-final, when we played Melbourne City up here and we beat them, okay, the Ryland McGree goal, and then we went on and won it. You know, the crowd, our crowds made a difference near the end. For the Sydney FC game, and like, you know, it was, some of the players actually said, the City players and the crowd got to them that night.
Yeah.
So it makes a huge difference when people's engaged. And that's our job, to engage them, and we're looking. We've changed things at the game. We've got a new game caller this year, and we're not putting the music on. And we'd been asking FFA all last year about this, and we want our ground announcer to understand the feel of the game. And sometimes when you need that little engagement for the crowd, get in there, get them up on their feet, get them in there. But overall, forget the VAR and getting beat 1-0 in the grand final. To achieve what we achieved, we'd be kidding ourselves if we said, yeah, definitely. We did give ourselves a chance. The players and the staff had that meeting pre-season, and we gave ourselves a chance. So we had the belief there, and I think at the beginning of the season, you'd have the diehards who had to believe with us, but a lot of the other ones were still on the outside. Yeah, we'll see what happens. We've heard all this before, and they all started jumping on board. Like, during the season, our membership increased to be over 2,000 people. And now we're up about that number now where we finished last season. We started with about 7, finished with 9-2. We're around about that 9-2 now, and we're going for 11. 11-1, 11-2, that would be the most the club's ever had. And I think we deserve that now, what we're putting back in. So I think the season overall was really satisfying, that the potential the place has got actually came through after 10 years.
Yeah.
So I think that was nice, and I came out and said last year, we're not a small team anymore. We have to get away from that. You can't
change the mentality.
I played it for years at the Mariners. We were the small boy, and I played it and played it to my advantage. Arnie came in and done the same thing. But yeah, we are a regional team. But when you look at our memberships, so when I was presenting to Dortmund, we're the fourth at the moment. We're the fourth biggest in the league. You've got Melbourne Victory way in front. You've got Wanderers about 15,000, Sydney's around about 10, and we're over 9 now. Then City's below us. So we're up there when it comes to the crowd averages. Well, we were the kind of shining light last year when it came to crowds. We were the increase of 20 odd percent.
Yeah.
Nobody else increased.
Yeah.
But we worked hard to get people to come to games. We'd done a lot of offers to get them in, and then those offers turned into people coming and enjoying the experience. Mm-hmm. And team playing good football.
Yeah.
Even if it wasn't playing good football, it could still get results. We got engagement for the fans. You know, all the groups came together, and that was massive. So you look back in the season and go, how good was that? Just hopefully this year's.
Yeah. What plans has the club got, or what have you been doing to try and convert the people that we managed to bring in as part of that momentum, and also the 29,000 people that rocked up for the grand final? What are we doing to make sure those come back?
Membership. So when we do special offers during the season, like the first game of the season, we've done the Perth Glory game, I think 5,000 people taking up the offer. So then we've got their data, so we send them We don't send it to all the members. We send stuff specifically to them, to the new members. We've had people in here phoning up all the lapsed members. We're ticking along, and that's why it keeps
creeping up.
We keep creeping up. Apparently, last night when the TV ad went on social, 200 and odd people linked straight through to members. I don't know how many it turned into, but they actually clicked through straight away last night. So we've got Wellington away in a week. 2 weeks is Adelaide. So we've actually got 3 weeks before the first home game. So this is big setting. That's why the ad now is on TV. It's going to be on radio. We're going to smash social. We're going to get another kick into the season. Now people's going to realise, shit, the season's around the corner. Let's get in here. And if we can get that 11,000 mark, okay, might not be with the kickoff, but that's the target. It was 11,200. It's another milestone. We've ticked a box that we've got the biggest membership we've ever had.
Is that full season memberships, or does that include the three game ones as well?
That's three game ones, and that's what everybody does. So the club, everybody's playing on the same field here.
Yeah, okay.
So it's three games, five games, six, whatever the other membership is. So it's not full game.
Well, is there any change around the, you talked earlier about the suggestions that the Greg O'Rourke came up with playing music between corners and free kicks, which is obviously not going to happen, but is there any tweaking of activations out the front before games? Are you looking to continue any of the stuff that you did last season?
Yeah,
is there any changes around
for the first game of the season? Big Joe Champness will be rapping out the front. So the big man, I put
beginning
it
of
to
his
him.
Stadium tour, someone asked that question.
So I put it to Joe, and he's not done a live gig, but he's all for it. So we'll have Joe Champness for the Melbourne Victory game, probably 15 minutes out the front, and we think that's a bit unique. We're going to have a lot more activations out the front for sponsors and stuff to get people there early to get in. But Big Joey's going to come and he's going to do a few numbers. And Big Joey is a bit of a superstar with the young ones. You know, they love him. He's just got this thing about him. And the fact he's a rapper, and the fact is we can give him a platform for maybe a new career when he's finished. So we're going to try things like that, just a wee bit off the cuff, to get in that engagement, because it's not, obviously, social media and stuff, that's went really well for us last year, like when we decided to do something, to get that message out there. It just helps us so much. Like, and I think the engagement from the Newcastle community and anything, like when Dolly, the little girl who committed suicide last year, I thought of that on the way to the game. By the time we got to the game, spoke to Fox, got stuff up on the screen, in the 14th minute, we had everybody in that stadium and people standing crying because it's terrible what's happened. So we need to be flexible that we can just make something happen. And I think we've proven that, and we'll be doing one of them for the first game of the season, but I'll speak to the family again for the young boy that died at Wall's End.
We'll
be doing a special thing for him in the 9th minute. But so we will be looking to engage, we'll be looking to do something a wee bit different. But I went to the World Cup, I've just been at Borussia Dortmund, and everybody's, match day this and match day that. They just played football. The crowd were there 3 hours before the game, gates opened 2.5 hours before the game. It's a social thing where you go there, you have a beer and you talk to your mates and get ready for a game of football. So you can do all the bells and whistles, but it's the football that actually gets people there. It's not the Aldi ruse at halftime or whatever it is.
It's
we can come up with stuff, but it's actually go there and support the team. And just talking Greg O'Rourke, because we spoke to Greg O'Rourke last year about us breaking the rules, and he was great. And one of the times I said to him, we're going to get the ground announcer to jump in, 85th minute, get everybody on their feet, jump with the Jets, and this round of applause for the Jets. He said, good, I'll go to the toilet. So he was, but our ground announcer wouldn't do it. So we had spoke to him a bit, so we'll use that. And we actually used music last year, because after the goal was scored, Ernie asked for Boys Are Back in Town to be played. So that happened last year. But we'll not be going, there's a corner, there's a throw-in, but we'll be wanting the ground announcer to, at the right time in that. At Dortmund, they've got an ex-player. So you'd say he's the Joe Griffiths of Dortmund. He's not as good-looking as Joe, but he's a bit older than Joe. And he does the players, and he announces them, and because he knows what the fans feel. He's a fan, he's a player. And it was brilliant. It's just, and I know the Wanderers do it, they say the first name, but it's just little things like that. And a big thing for me, simple things keep me happy.
Yeah.
The players have their huddle. And then they went to the yellow and black wall and thanked them before the game. You know, and I looked and I went, how good's that? That the players actually acknowledge the fact. I know when our players come out, we go and we do the wee clap. But I'll be talking to Ernie and that about that later, because to me, yeah, whatever's there, 9,000, 10,000, 12,000, we should thank them for coming and get them onside straight away and after the game. And Dortmund were very, it was very aligned to the fans. And it was really refreshing that a club that size actually respects the small things.
Yeah, absolutely.
If they can do it, we can certainly do it.
Right. Well, one, Matt Hutchinson asked a question about the, we know the article that came out a couple of days ago in the Australian from Regat.
Oh, is that the article that they forgot to put all the good stuff in?
Yeah. So, obviously, the response came out to that 24 hours later in the Herald, but...
and it came out 24 hours later in the Australian, because all the story got cut. Mm-hmm. They cut the bit about Jair, they cut about all the extensions of contracts. Mysteriously never made it, but it made it the second day.
Yeah, so the what did you just want to go through the response to that? Obviously the article basically focused on Martin Lee's companies having issues with the US China tariff war.
Definitely.
And he asked us to see whether we could reduce some I think 600,000. Yep. Was the so obviously the response in the Herald was that you said that, well, this is why we've got to spend this plus such and such, so that's not going to happen, and he was happy with that.
So simple as, I got a message for the accountant, or can you look at cutting? And the budget had been approved. We'd started with another thing the story never tells you in the Australian was we've put on new medical staff, so we'll get more football staff, we'll get more office staff, which was all approved in the budget, because we still get the smallest staff in the league, but we increased. The player budget is slightly more than last year, just slightly, and it was all approved, but then Martin came back, he said, could we cut 600, and so I got the email for the accountant, so I phoned Martin, then he got back to me that night, and I was pacing about the park in front of the town hall, because I was going to a function. So I was walking, so if anybody saw some weirdo walking about in the trees, it was me. And I never had a long overcoat on. So I explained, because obviously it'd been easy just to say, okay, Martin, and we don't sign Jair. Well, Jair's not on that much, but he's up there. We'll not sign Jair, we'll not put on another physio, and we'll not put on the new media manager who's going to start it with Matt. Straight away we've saved 600 grand, no problem. But it was the wrong thing.
Yeah.
We came a long way last year. We've got that momentum going. We need it. We've got the Champions League coming up. So the people think the Champions League is just going to be easy, but we've still to qualify.
Yeah.
The extra stress, 10, 12, 14-hour flight, but then you've got 3 hours to the airport. It's a big load on your team. So to cut back on the physio, players, we couldn't do it. So I just explained all this stuff, and Matt said, yeah, I agree with you. So he'll have had an accountant come to him and say, can you cut this amount of money off Ledman FC in for the Jets? Because then it's good on paper, without a lot of thought been putting it. Then when you actually explained to Martin the reasons we did put these things in place, was he understood, and he was fine by it.
And we've seen what's happened over the years with cost cutting at the Jets.
Yeah.
It just, it's an ever increasing spiral
and Martin's to... never gave us a bottomless pit of money to spend. Mm. Never. It's always been tight. Mm. We've always been tight, and it will continue to be so. And is his cash flow struggling at the moment? Yes, it is. But I just watched the news this morning before I left the house, and the markets have crashed in America, and I don't understand them. But so it's not just Martin Lee's company. It was made out as though Martin was the only company in China. The full of the Chinese stock market's halved. You know, our great sponsor, the Greater Bank, they were explaining it to me, because they know the markets, and everybody's in the same boat. So Martin's And what people don't know, he invested tens of millions of dollars in the next technology for LED, which goes on sale for him. It's in production now, around about March, February. And that's when his next kick on will come through. So it's one of those things. He's invested big time. His shares have went down. And then because your shares have went down, your company's not worth as much and you can't borrow as much money. That's
the other thing that also you mentioned in the Herald article in response to that Australian article was the Jets are still on track for breaking even in the next couple of years.
Yeah, that's the plan.
What is that purely by increasing sponsorships and bringing partners on board, or is that going to be looking at memberships and increasing that sort of thing?
It has to be everything. So memberships, obviously, if we get up to 11.2 this year and breaks a record, then we never put the prices. And I'll come out with some videos next week. I'm going to come out with one of my silly videos and I'm just trying to make a point to people. Our season tickets are the cheapest in the league. If you go to the 13 home games, the Mariners game away, 6 W League games, it's something like $9 a game.
Yeah.
It's all right.
Yeah.
So I'm actually just wanting to make this clear to people. A lot of people said we should have put our prices up last year. If we'd have put our prices up last year, the first thing we'd have got for not all the fans would be first year of success and now you're shafting the supporters. Mm. So that's why we never put them up, because we knew that would be the response. And we wanted to be one step ahead of them, saying, no, we're not putting them up. Because
yeah.
We got asked, we said, no, we're not putting them up. Why? Because a lot of people were just waiting for us to put them up so they can jump on us. Mm. Yeah, will they go up next year? Yeah, they'll go up a bit, but they're not going to go up drastically. But we have to go up. But when you look at value for money, we're actually given good value. The sponsorships went up year on year, and again, it's hard up here. So okay, we don't want to be seen as a regional team, but we're in a region, so it's hard to actually get money. Get McDonald's on board, the Greater Bank have been amazing, Inspirations Paint, Extender and Viola, they're all been good and they're all growing with the club, which is great, but we need to get more. And obviously, we'll sell a player or two, which is going to be, that's inevitable. Business. That's going to, it's going to happen. And I'll never apologise for that. Because if we develop them, we deserve to be able to cash in. So, and then, if there's an increase in the grant for the governing body, that'll help as well.
Mm. Well, that's, hopefully the independent A-League, that'll hopefully pay dividends down the line when the next this TV deal only lasts for another two seasons?
Four seasons.
Four, okay, good.
Yeah, change.
All right. Okay, so preparations for the Asian Champions League, what sort of work are you guys having to do to get ready for that? Obviously, the big key date's going to be the actual home and away qualification.
Well, it's a home then away if we win. So it's not home and away. If we get beat at home,
we're done.
Done.
Okay.
So we don't know who we're going to get yet. It's usually a Thai team. Depends where the rankings are. It's usually a Thai. And then
when
if we
won,
I'm not sure. Around about November, they reckon. Because that's when the seasons finish in Asia. So it could be the game on the Tuesday, Wednesday, and then could be China. China get like a free spot. They get an extra spot. And then go away. Then if we win that, we'd qualify. But like, I'm a Rangers fan, and everybody knows that. Rangers had 8 qualifying games to qualify for Europa League stages. Mm. Theirs was 4 home and away. They started in July. Their pre-season started in July. So they had 8 games before they actually got to the group stages. But they got to group stages and got €15 million for it. So it's a bit of a difference for us.
Mm.
Yeah, the prize money for winning, and you get winning that, but we'll lose money on. And people think going into Asia is great. Like 10 years ago when the Mariners done it and the Jets did it, you know, we both lost a lot of money.
Yeah.
And at that time, the crowds were still reasonable, but we need to get the Newcastle punters on side to say, hey, this is the biggest level of football we can play in this area. This is like your Real Madrid's. This is like Dortmund playing Monaco the other night, you know, so
What's the club going to have to do to be able to get decent crowds? So because midweek fixtures, not just Australia, it's Asia wide. It's not really a competition that
China get good crowds. China and Japan do okay. Korea and the rest of them struggle. We're coming up with a concept for as a major sponsor, but it's just getting finalised now. And that will be one way that we'll be, so part of that deal will be to get people in the gates as well, so which could help.
That won't end up like Centrebet, where we have to take the sponsorship off the goes.
No.
Can't have it in Asia.
No. So I remember that. I actually helped get that deal coming to you, because they came to me at Central Coast. I know the guy, the agent had done it as well.
Working early in your CEO role even then.
Yeah, no, so we'll be trying to generate exposure for Newcastle, and that through the Champions League. And that, because it's the rules and regulations, we can only have one sponsor. The rules, it will cost us money every home game to cover up the signs.
Yeah.
And I know the stadium's trying to say, no, it's too dangerous to cover up the big sign, but they'll just not put the lights on at night. But it'll cost tens of thousands of dollars just to cover up the signs.
Mm.
So it's a nightmare. At Dortmund the other night, so similar rules to Champions League. Their stadium is 83,000. The black and yellow and black wall holds about 25,000. But for Champions League games, they have to put all the seats back in, so it reduces the crowd. It reduces the capacity to 66,000. And then the next day, they take them all back out again, and they do it. That's why they've 850 employees to give them a job.
Mm, yes, or they're all screwing and unscrewing chairs. Craig Welton asked a question. We obviously signed Kane Shepherd from Avondale. He asked if there was a reason why the club's looking at other NPL competitions rather than the Northern NPL for players. Was there nobody in the local area that was going to be able to be offered a trial? I think we did trial a couple of local products.
We tried a couple when James Vigili was one. And then we actually looked at a few other boys whose names had been put forward, because obviously I coach the youth team in Labby, so we see them every week. Angus Thurgate came through the NPL, and he's now got a 3-year contract and doing very well. But Kane Shepherd came up in trial, same as Vigili came in, and we looked at other boys and was outstanding.
Yeah.
That was the reason. He sent a video, he looked all right, he looked at him in training, and in my opinion, he'll be the dart horse of the year. We'll get a few goals off him, but yeah, it'd be nice every year to go out and bring boys in for the NPL. But it's basically, we need to get, when I was at the Mariners as coach, I signed players for the NPL every year, usually boys around about that 19, 18, 19, but even some older ones came in. There are only one or two of them will make it and come in. And in our opinion, we look every week. Joe Griffiths is playing every week in it. I'm playing every week in it. We talk about it every week. Me, Labby and Joe would speak about who's done well, who's done this, can they step up and do it. And but this year, look, Vigili was probably the best one to come in, and he just wasn't quite what Ernie was looking for.
Yeah.
And it's as simple as that.
Yeah. The second part of his question was, is there anything that the local clubs such as Edgeworth or Western or obviously Broadmeadow and those sorts of clubs, is there anything they can do to get their to improve and get their players into the Jets team?
They just need to keep doing what they're doing, and they're going to, people think, oh yeah, we've got half a dozen players. You know, Sydney FC, when was the last time they signed a player for the State League? They probably wouldn't have signed one, you know, so it's, there will be players who step up. It's a very small percentage.
Mm.
So I would love to sign players every year from the NPL, definitely, because it brings that that ownership that he's one of our players.
Yeah.
But if we're losing games every week, that doesn't do you any good. So it's getting that squad. Somebody, whoever comes in, has to, because this season, especially with the Champions League, everybody in the squad will get used. And there'll be boys out of my youth team squad get used as well. Definitely, because they need that. They're going to need the depth. When you've only got a 23-man squad, it's hard. So they just need to keep doing what they're doing.
Yeah.
And there'll be one or two boys that pop up.
All right. Well, that also slides into another question. Are you going to be continuing your role with the youth team, or has Labby completed his qualifications?
Labby will have completed his qualifications in November. So when the NPL, I'm not sure exactly the date, whenever that is, if he's got his A licence, he'll be the head coach. When we went to the UEFA Cup, he never knew it till he got there, but he was head coach and had to do all the media stuff. I'm happy to take a back seat. is in Labby, and I'll still be at training every day I can be, and I'll still go to every game I can be, but I'll be happily go as the assistant. But I don't even need to be called assistant. I'll just be there as part of the staff and help Labby with his career as a coach, because he's going to be a very good coach. If it's not for the start of that season, in the first week or two, we'll make a change. As soon as his accreditation comes through, he'll be head coach.
Okay. One question I had, obviously we've signed Ernie for the next two seasons. What's the succession plan? Because obviously we can't rely on one coach being here forever. Are we looking to develop from within for someone to eventually take over from Ernie, or would we be looking to another experienced coach? See what the candidates are like?
What the Mariners did at one stage was, I think they went out to look for the best suitable coach they could find in the world, and then Tony Wormsley gave himself the job. So mm-hmm. I could always give myself the job.
We've seen that. That doesn't win grand finals.
Obviously I wanted Ernie to stay, he wanted to stay, so it was easy, and we extended his contract. So Ernie's 65. Mm. If you asked Ernie now, if we had two reasonable years, would you retire in 2 years' time? I think he wouldn't retire in 2 years' time. I think he'd keep going on. And that's not as though we'd be going, oh, because you're 67 now, I'm going to shut the door. Definitely not. Mm. But he's very happy with Clayton. He's very happy with Lee. Ernie and Labby's now taking more and more to do with the first team now as well. So actually, you look at that, that's a succession plan.
Yeah.
But then we have to look at, well, is Clayton going to be a head coach? Is he going to be a good assistant coach? And this is all the questions that will happen. So I don't know if there's really a succession plan at the moment, to be honest. It's just, Ernie's here, he's like a spring chicken. He's got a spring, he loves being in Newcastle, loves living here, loves the environment. And if you're in that frame of mind, you don't feel your age. Mm. Although I've just come off a plane last night and I feel like shit for a 57-year-old. So, as such, not a progressing plan, but there are a lot of good things happening. And then you look at Deansy. We brought Deansy in as the technical director.
Yep.
He's doing the women. You've got McBreen doing the... He's been doing the kids for the last 3 years. Now he's working in the club as well. So we've got good people in round about the club now that were trying to... help people who have helped the club and been part of the club.
Yeah, I'm sort of looking at the situation where with Steve Corriger in Sydney, where they've had him in the system for a fair while, and he was hungry to become a head coach, and he was the best. Well, he was. I don't know what their recruitment process was like, but he's the best candidate that Sydney FC have chosen to take them to the next step. Now that Graham Arnold's gone, so are we going to be in a position to do that in, you know, four or five seasons, to have somebody that's hungry to be a head coach that
we can
bring through?
Definitely, because it's a team. It's a team as well, you know. So if Ernie had to leave and go somewhere else and take half the staff with him, well, then that causes it's a different issue.
Mm.
But if somebody was going to retire in 2, 3, 4 years' time, we'd start looking at that. You know, that's something you start. You don't just go like that and go, right, that's going to happen.
Yeah.
You have to watch how people are handling it. Can they take the pressure? And Steve Corriger was there for about 13 years.
Mm.
So that's a long apprenticeship.
Yeah.
I'd done 5 years as an apprentice with Dave Mitchell when I was his assistant. Was I ready to step up when I turned the Northern Spirit on? Yeah, I was. But as an assistant, you're sheltered. It's totally different when you're the main man and you're making that big decision.
Well, we've seen that with first-year coaches with the Jets.
Definitely.
In previous seasons.
And it's dealing with players, dealing with big players, dealing with split-second decisions, substitute. That's totally different from being an assistant where you can give all the information and all the help you want to head coach, but it's still the head coach. And at the end of the game, when you're getting grilled at a press conference, nobody really says, oh, did the assistant coach tell you that? It's you cop it in the chin.
Right. Another question was asked was, how's recruitment going for the W League team? Obviously, we've just announced a couple of players within in the last few days. And are there any more signings to come?
We're just a bit done now for the girls, and Deansy's put together another good squad by the looks of it. He had a few other ones that he was lined up, and we had a few big players who actually pulled out at the last minute. So he's done a great job. He's done a fantastic job last year, and I think the last one's coming at the weekend. So we're basically done. They're back into training now. They're off to Tarry at the weekend. They're playing the Mid-North Coast select team. But Dean's a credit. I can't give him enough credit because obviously we don't have a big staff in here, but Deansy's—he's not one man. There are a lot of infrastructure around to help him with the paperwork, but when it comes to recruitment and that, Deansy's doing it himself. He does a fantastic job.
And seeing what the other W League teams have done in their recruitment, how do you think the W League team will go this season?
I think we'll shape up all right again. I think that taste they got last year and. In that semi-final when they got, because Hannah shouldn't have been sent off, you know, and they came back and they showed that. I think they'll build for that and go believe. It's that belief in ourselves. You know, you look at us 2 years ago and did we have that belief we could win? You probably say no after you lost a couple of games. Mm. But last year you're going, no, we can win this. We can win. And the girls had the same attitude last year. And I think that's a club thing. And you look at the results down through the academy, it's the most successful year the academy's ever had. So there are a lot of positivity because, as we say to the youth team player, we're going to train you the same way as you train the first team. Because when we give you the opportunity to go to train the first team, I want you to get asked back. And like when we put Jack Simmons up, who's 15 years old, he scores a goal against Shanghai Shenhua, and there'll be an announcement. When's this going up?
In the next week.
All right, so there'll be an announcement that we've signed him in a four-year scholarship. Because he's a 16-year-old player who's going to be a superstar. We don't care what age you are. If you're big enough and ugly enough, you're going to get pushed through. Mm. And he get pushed through to the 18s. Then he came to us and we looked, wow, this boy can play. I gave him to Ernie and Ernie went, this boy can play. And that's what we can give now at the club. Because it's us and it's not Northern. And that's no disrespect to Northern. But when it's a different organisation running it, you don't have that communication to... The ones who can push through, you push them through.
Are we sending anyone to Portugal again this season?
No. Martin Lee pulled out the sponsorship 6 months ago.
Right.
But he's still got a relationship with the club that we sent the two boys to, but we're not. As a career-building thing, and I know people say Joe Chapman went as a nobody and came back. Nah, Joe Chapman went as a young boy, came back as a more mature boy, because it was a good experience living and playing football away from home, but the football experience wasn't great. Yeah. Better development here.
Okay. I suppose, and just harkening back to the question we just asked about the women, how do you... Obviously, a lot of the other A-League teams have strengthened a lot this season. Perth look like they're going to be much, much stronger with a new coach. Wellington have got Mark Rudan, who's... They've brought in some good players and they're going to be looking to improve on last year. And the Mariners have signed an absolute raft of players and got Mike Mulvey. How do you think our chances are this season with regards to the Premier's plate and another grand final tilt?
I think we're as a good position as we were last year, if not better. I saw the article in the Herald said I was only signed 5 players in the Australian. Yeah, that was because... That's all we wanted to sign
because
we had re-signed all the players. It's called good management of building the football club. Mm. We're happy where we're at. The Kane Shepherd one, he'll be the sleepy, he'll be the smoky one, I think. Jair's now hitting the straps. He was totally underdone when he came in. You know, he was struggling big time, but he's now getting on top. So he's still got another week or so to go, but he's... He looks very tidy. Obviously, Ronald's fully fit. We're going to miss Roy. Regardless, he's going to be missed. And Champness will be missed as well, more of that impact. The Mitch Austin, his pace, like, okay, he's come back. We tried to sign him last year from Victory. They wouldn't release him. So this year he's came on board. And because the way we play on the break, you saw that game against the Wanderers, like he 3 or 4 times could have, if he was given that ball, because his pace is lightning, we're going to get a lot of joy. He set up Kane Shepherd's goal. So we've got a bit of pace. Kane Shepherd's 6'3", really great left foot on him. He's good in the air. he retains the ball. Jair, we know his record. Okay, China wasn't great for him, but that his family wasn't there. It was a shit club, shit region, not good environment to be in.
Mm.
He's loving this place. He's loving it. He's a family man, so we're expecting big things off him. And you look at Petrados. Petrados is just getting better and better. And so you look at that front third now. We've got a bit of depth there now. When Roy comes back in and Champ has come back in, how are we going to pick four players out of that to start? Kantorowski, outstanding. Okay, he's had a few niggly injuries. Stevie Gakovic, outstanding. Redenton's just slowly creep it every week. He's got better and better. The game against Wanderers, he was outstanding. So now that's going to put pressure on Stevie and Kantorowski. You've got Cowburn in there. And you look at the back, Bogues and Topper just soldiering on. Big Lockie's pushing them on. Then you go, where's Hoff? Is he going to be a striker? Is he going to be a fullback? Is he going to be a midfielder? He could be anything. He'll go wherever he's get put, and he'll do a job for you. You've got Jajewski, you've got Ivan now, who's chapping a bit to get back in, Johnny Kutrumbas. So there's a lot of depth there. And then you've got Angus Thurgate, who he'll be part of that first team squad all year and do well. He'll score a few more goals. And Paddy Langios on a scholarship, he'll make his debut this year. My tip now is Pat Langios and Jack Simmons will make their first team debut this year. And so I think strength-wise is depth. If we lose a couple of key players, we can, same as last year, we just plug the holes with the squad we had, and Hoff is a prime example, picking up a shitload of goals.
What are you hoping to achieve this season? On the park and off the park?
More members, increase the crowds again, increase atmosphere at the ground. We're having that active supporters meeting in a few weeks. Improve that, work with the fans, feel the fans, talk with the fans, and I think we did that quite well last year.
Yeah.
Understanding what they feel as well, and I think we do that well because we're fans. So that's there. On the park, it's big to show that we're missing a one-hit wonder, that last year was a flash in the pan, because we need to be a big club now. We need to be seen as a big club, in my opinion. Why should we expect to go and get beat against Sydney or Melbourne? We shouldn't. We should be going in there going, we've got a chance here today, boys, let's do it. And as the TVI says, we are Newcastle, so we are made of Newcastle, so let's show people that grit. And that doesn't mean we play polished football every week. It means we want to be the best professional sporting team in Australia, on and off the park. And it doesn't mean winning every week, but it means turning up, putting in. Okay, you're going to get beat some weeks, but do it and have a go.
All right, two questions. First one is, obviously, like I mentioned, the Mariners have certainly strengthened this season. What are we going to do to kick the F3 Derby up to that next level? Obviously, it's going to be competitive on the park. What can we do to push Fox to give it equal billing to the Melbourne and Sydney derbies?
So to get that, we need to get bigger crowds and more TV audience. You know, it's simple. They look at it. It's all done with ratings. They look at it and go,
because the games last year were really good.
Ah, good games.
Even though we won by decent margins, it was competitive.
And the crowd, I think the season ticket reciprocal right thing's great. And for us to take 2,500-3,000 both games, then they're a different class. And even the year one, the 2 year ago, they brung up, to be fair to them, that first game they brung up big numbers. Most have brung up for the old days.
Yeah.
We need that. We need that interaction. We need both sets of fans to travel. I don't think we need banners with snakes' heads and Homer Simpson and stuff like that, because that's
like, that just worked out well.
It just worked out well for us. I think it's getting those that, and I think we, as the Jets, last year made the atmosphere with our travelling support and home support for the games. So to get that next step, I don't think we need to do better. Both teams need to do better next year to get better results the year after. So us scoring a few goals and getting a few crowds is not going to affect it. It'll affect it next year, because then they'll look at and go, this is a main fixture again.
Do you have dialogue at all with Fox Sports about promotion of games and all that sort of stuff? Like, they do seem to concentrate on, obviously, the Metro is where the audience is, but it, there's 10 teams in the league. They,
yeah, but you
nine
look,
that they can control.
They look at, we get the ratings every week, and our ratings aren't great, because obviously up here they don't have as much pay TV and disposable income, so it's all down to TV ratings. But all of a sudden, if we're going to chuck out a few games this year, 3-2s, 4-3s, big crowd, great atmosphere, that's a big tick for the year after.
Okay.
So that's what Fox want. Fox want ratings.
All right, and the final question is obviously the question that gets asked every time we sit down. Now, what's the progress on the jet-shaped hats?
No idea. I did ask
we
that
We need designs,
again.
We need templates, we need costings.
The jets.
I think last year we spoke, you had them, obviously
had the
Viva come on.
Yeah.
Viva come on.
And we spoke to them.
Yeah.
And they
did
sent,
they come back to you with anything?
They sent through some, and the price was extortionate, and it was like, don't even go there. I'm going to email, it won't be today, Jets, you're watching, shape.
He is actually writing this.
Hats. And that's just underneath Ernie, Jack's school. So, because we were going to extend Jack, so we need to, he's only 16, so the boy, we just need to work out a training schedule for him to get the best out of him.
And then we'll get the jet shot.
And I'm
hats.
Putting an asterisk next to it to fuck it, so I don't, I just a bit swore there.
That's all right.
So, and then, during the season, you could see a couple of entertaining things.
Yep.
That you'll have a laugh at the time, and then, so we'll be having a go. But we want to make it a place our fans want to go because they know it's going to be, the team's going to do well and have a go. And we want to come and, like, when I saw the comments on the TV ad, on the stuff I went out on social yesterday, you read that and you get goosebumps.
Yeah.
Because it means something to people.
Yeah.
And we want this team, and that's the thing. Okay, I've only been here 2 years. I'm just a winger, a ringer. But when you actually, I could feel it. I could feel the change. I could feel walking about the street, it changed. Because you could feel that people were actually proud of the team again. I think we gave them pride again in the team. It's not, I'm not just a supporter anymore. Yeah, I'm a supporter. I'll buy my ticket and I'll turn up. But I'm proud to be a Jets fan. And that was a big plus for us last year in here that, we could feel that.
Honest final question, just related to the jet-shaped hat, obviously with merchandise, how was the first year of the Viva Viva partnership, and what's the feedback been like with the take-up of jerseys and the merchandise that's on offer? Are they looking to expand their offering?
So
what's happening with that side of things?
From the team point of view, we had a few hiccups, just with quality and stuff, but it was all fine during the season. This year, the new training gear and apparel tracksuits, different class. It's stepped up another level. Boys look outstanding. Girls will have their own girls' cut. Everything's good. The three new kits we designed, the feedback, because always, you know, it's like we get slaughter. We never got slaughter.
Mm-hmm.
Everything was like, wow, wow, wow. Which is, it's just great that you actually try and do something. And people have bought in what we're trying to do.
Yeah.
I think they realise we're here for the long term and we're trying to do the right thing. And, you know, I'll get asked, are we going to do, is a green and cinnamon coming back and blah, blah.
Band design jersey.
Yeah. And doing the track, that stuff we can look at. You know, that's definitely, it's not same, but at the moment, it's getting that uniqueness. Yeah, right, what deserves it? Because I think our gold shirt, which we're asked for, we were asked last year be a hardcore because of that split between cinnamon, gold, blah, blah. It was the worst selling shirt. It hardly sold anything.
The gold one?
The gold one.
Mm.
And okay, maybe it wasn't the best gold, but the gold one was a big request. As a retail thing with green and cinnamon, as a purely retail thing, it's not a seller. So that's where you need that hardcore. So is that hardcore 50 to 100 at the old boys?
Yep.
Which, that's not enough. They need more than that.
Yep.
You look at the black, why do we go black? Because we looked at a few of the big clubs in Europe, they had all went black, and it's a big retail seller, casual, and it's been a big hit. We incorporated the white with the gold, and I think that's sharp, you know. And the blue is just really nice and traditional, and I think it looks very smart. So I think, and then we'll have a RAF round. We'll have a RAF jersey pop up. The RAF round will be, we're looking at doing a remembrance round, but because of the significance of that, we just stayed away. is probably going to be the Mariners game, the back end of the season, which is quite a big game. So the kit, Viva's come in and it is done. You always have your wee hiccups, but it's certainly improved. And they were happy last year, and obviously getting to a grand final helped. But Everything Football did a good job for us, and it's been a good partnership so far.
Beautiful. All right. Laurie, we've thrown enough questions at you, and really thank you for your time. Really appreciate it.
Pleasure as always, and thanks for your support. And don't be scared about asking the hard questions. Always happy to give me my opinion.
Absolutely. All right. Thanks, everybody, for submitting your questions. Check out all the other podcasts on the subscription links at newcastlefootball.net. But we just have to say thank you very much, Laurie McKenna, for your time.
Cheers, Mum.